tweet at Late Debate RTE.
Hello again. Well, we were talking about the protocol issue before the break, and back to the panel here in studio. The, I suppose, Brexit, the Northern Ireland Protocol, Christine, has been one of the few areas where there has been a level of a unity between government and opposition on it. Does it represent, I suppose, an opportunity for Sinn Féin as much as the government to appear statesmanlike and show themselves on an international stage? Is that part of the reason why that there has been that unanimity?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, they kind of have to show it at this stage. You know, they need everyone in the corner to get this thing over the line. Like, how long have we been talking about it now in studios like this? So Sinn Féin, I think, you know, as much as they have those leaders' questions back and forth and the slagging matches, and then you see Mary Lou going in to talk to Leo Varadkar and shoring up, I suppose. Both of them are heading stateside next week. You know, there'll be significant discussion and focus on the Good Friday Agreement, on Brexit, Northern Ireland, you know, with Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton is going to be at a lot of those events, you know, perhaps shoring up their message to have a stronghold here, and, you know, to, I suppose, choose their words delicately maybe when it comes to ensuring that nothing is scuppered when it comes to the DUP, because we have seen, you know, somebody opens their mouth the last minute and all can come asunder. So, you know, it's interesting to see that they actually do try and work together on issues like this.
All right, as an issue on the southern side of the border, Jack, is it a bit of a nil-all draw on that front? Any particular political advantage to either side to be gained from this particular issue?
Not necessarily. I think Sinn Féin perceive the potential for a bit of an advantage north of the border, if they can kind of point to the DUP as being in some way delinquent, you know, and refusing to return to the kind of bread and butter issues that Patricia was talking about. And I think that's why they have been putting that little bit more pressure on and calling for the DUP to restore the Stormont institutions. And you saw that, I think, today before the meeting with the Taoiseach, whereas the parties of government here have been more, you know, very much in the hands-off space. They're absolutely just saying, look, DUP, take as much time as you need. No pressure from us, because I think they know the last thing that that unionism and loyalism would welcome is the idea of Dublin bullyfooting its way into the debate and trying to force their hand. So while there's a slight step change, I think, between Sinn Féin and the government, I think, yeah, Christine is right, and they're more or less all on the same page here. But, you know, that runway again, it's not infinite. It's not forever. At some point, I think, over the spring, and if we're still not getting anything into the early summer post those local elections, then I think, you know, there does have to be a question asked about whether and should any pressure be put on, and indeed will any pressure come from below. You know, does the DUP have a mandate from unionism or from its electorate, just from its voters, who are just normal people in many ways just trying to get through the day and tackle the cost of living crisis? Does it have a mandate to continually you know, block the resumption of Stormont? I think that's a question that's going to be posed to them the longer this goes on.
Adam, Sinn Féin's performance as an opposition here, solid performance for Mary Lou McDonald as a leader in the polls, solid performance for the party in the polls, a slight plateauing recently. So overall, they would be happy to be at this point in government with that kind of a platform to build on before the next general election, would they?
I think so. I think, though, they have been slipping slightly in the polls, and I think Sinn Féin will want an election as soon as possible. They don't want to allow any other issues to come up. We mentioned the likes of Jonathan Dowd earlier on, and that may come back up again later on down the line, and those sort of issues will damage the party, I think. Before this, or when this government started, they said they were going to be the most effective opposition in history, and I don't really think they have been. There hasn't been huge policies that they've been coming saying, this is what you need to be doing. There hasn't been really anything that they've like hammered the government on. Except maybe housing is what I was going to say. I think they have been politically shrewd, though, in that at every opportunity they've tested the Dáil majority because they really want that election. And I think you've seen that with the eviction motion that they're going to put down the week after next. They want to try and push those backbench TDs out of the, into, you know, so they don't vote with the government.
All right. Housing is a pretty big issue, Philip, to hammer the government on. That and the very effective use of personal case study stories from constituents. We heard Pierce Doherty in the Dáil today talking about not a constituent of his, but somebody in the South Dublin County Council area being told to present themselves at a Garda station. We've heard them press the issue on the nursing home charges and really about where the heart of government lies and government instincts. That seems to be the main point of attack. And this eviction ban is ripe turf for them to play on.
Well, look, the point of their strategy, their political strategy, is to paint a picture of the nasty government out for them, only looking after themselves, looking after the elites, and forgetting about the little people. And in some instances, you can't argue with the stories that they present. Like you said, you have one of the local authorities in Dublin telling... it was TD Mark Ward that a family, a mother and two children, should go to the Garda station because she was facing homelessness. If she wanted to, in their words, keep safe, or if that failed, maybe try a friend or a family that she trusted. So it's like it's hard to argue that that is an awful situation to have developed. The government will tell us that everything is going swimmingly with the housing and have built more houses than 1974 or whatever they like to say.
75.
Yeah, 75, is it? Yeah, 74 was a good year then. But so, like, it was, but on the ground, everybody knows anybody has any kind of foot in housing. Whether, like, if you're not a homeowner already, or you're a renter, or you're trying to get on the property market, you know that it is. It's just not fixed out there. Like, I'm a renter myself, and like, I don't know what I'd do if my landlord decided, oh, I want that house back. Like, where would you go to live?
Christina, do you think this particular issue, the eviction ban, could be the issue that could provide them with a breakthrough? Because it's not hard to portray a government as the nasty party when they seem to have made a policy without being able to absolutely demonstrate the causal link between the imposition of the eviction ban and the shrinking of the private landlords as a part of the market. And secondly, just the inability to answer the question, where are the evicted tenants supposed to go?
Yeah, I think the government are in real trouble here because even themselves are finding it hard to defend the position that they've taken. You know, they've been flat out asked, is homelessness going to increase because of a decision that you guys made? And they're like, yes, it will. So it's not even, you know, sidestepping an issue, coming up with a clever answer. They're very much out front and centre saying, yes, this is going to happen. I think we'll see they're going, you know, we have the recess, the St. Patrick's Day festivities. But where the problem, I think, is probably going to lie for government is when those latest homeless figures come out, and it will have either jumped significantly, or it is definitely going to rise, and you're going to see more of those personal issues, those personal stories, tragedies coming out to play on the Dáil floor, and not having an answer, not having a defence for that position that they've taken. And I don't think that it stands that, you know, they can say that the eviction ban didn't, you know, like that the homeless numbers didn't go up. You know, of course, they're looking at it and saying, look, it didn't have the effect that we would have liked. But there's no categorical answer here that it didn't stem the increase, that, you know, that there's no hard and fast facts that they can point to.
Jack, to go back to Sinn Féin, though, as a party, and they may not like this analogy, but they have a front bench composed of many Jimmy O'Briens, to draw a rugby analogy. Their people have already played in several different positions. They have several different areas of expertise and are able to perform in the media, holding the government to account across several different portfolios. So in that respect, they have depth on the bench as well.
Yeah, Six Nations time of year, so it's a fair comparison. Yeah. Look, I think that Sinn Féin are absolutely delighted to see a big housing issue coming over the horizon to get their teeth into, because that is where they have made all those gains over the last few years, going back to the general election in 2020.
They've really written the book on it in the case of their
true enough, yeah. Yeah, several books, and I think you wrote one on Bussaris as well, but I'm not sure that's going to be so salient for voters. I haven't read that one, but I think the problem that Sinn Féin had over the last kind of, over the lifetime of this government, if they had a problem, right, is that on COVID, they were more or less on the same page as the government. Like they couldn't point to things that they would fundamentally do differently. Yeah, they'd criticise, you know, the implementation or some of the small choices made within antigen testing or something like that. The same is true on migration, where they're not going to, you know, advocate repudiating Ireland's international obligations or take an anti-migrant stance. The same is largely true, I would say, on the cost of living crisis, where, you know, the government is spending money. Sinn Féin say, oh, we'd spend a bit more money. But again, fundamentally, it's kind of the same stance here. Somewhere where I think they were strong for a time is the kind of low standards and high places. They made a lot of capital out of the Leo the Leak stuff, but they have their own problems there as well, you know, and there's ongoing questions about the finances and SIPO and all the rest of it. Housing is where they are absolutely, like, uniquely strong. They can just beat up on the government on housing all day long, and that's what their entire success stems from. It's not the entirety of their success, but it's where it's rooted. Now, I think that an interesting question would be to see, right, they have a big housing issue now, okay? It's going to go on for, I think, at least kind of 6, 8, 12 weeks into the summer when the kind of eviction staggered period is over. It'll be really interesting to see if they make any polling gains off that, if it kind of reverse that plateau that they're in at the moment. Because I think perhaps everyone who is really kind of galvanised by the voting or by the housing issue is probably already supporting Sinn Féin. So I think it's really interesting to see that now they have the bit between their teeth, can they start peeling off more support from the mainstream parties and building that momentum back again for themselves.
Do they have to be careful about what the fight is that they pick next? Because the one they picked over Pascal Donoghue may not necessarily have been the one to their greatest benefit, pointed to the issues that Jack was talking about over expenses and all of that.
You're right, Jay. That kind of backfired a little bit. It looked like it was, you know, it was getting bad for Pascal Donoghue for a while there. But then once it started tipping into, well, you did this and we did that and everybody's pointing fingers, I think the opposition seemed happy to drop the issue, which says a lot. And I think you're right, this eviction situation is going to be the thing that they're going to pick up, and they're going to run with this now for a while, I think. And I think it's something they are going to make political gains in. But I think it's not the only issue, that housing isn't the only issue that saw Sinn Féin really pick up a lot of that vote. I think a lot of the voters' decision to move away from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael is the decision that they went in together, the confidence and supply agreement, and then again they doubled down by going into coalition together. And I think other parties didn't really offer we were never in government before, give us the chance like Sinn Féin have. And I think the Social Democrats will have the opportunity there to offer themselves up as an alternative to Sinn Féin.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think with the housing issue, particularly with Sinn Féin, as we get closer to a general election, they're going to obviously be hammering the government big time on the housing crisis. But people are going to start looking at Sinn Féin's policies in more in depth and exactly what the opposite is. Because I think Micheál Martin was raising that in Leaders' Questions today, saying
so that means that they make all these promises. They're just chasing votes at the moment. But when they do go into government, they're going to have to make a lot of big decisions.